You're here in Marquette as part of the residency project. It's the Marquette Creative Residency, a home for creatives on the Superior Coast. You're one of three residents selected to be part of this program during the spring here in Marquette. And, well, I guess, first of all, we'd like to welcome you to our listeners here at Public Radio 90.
Thank you.
The residency, it's for, they're listed as creatives, not creative people or artistic or anything, but creatives. What's your understanding of that?
My understanding is that the Chamber of Commerce and Evolve Marquette was interested in attracting people to Marquette who live outside of Michigan, who are working in creative industries. And so that could be a fine artist, or it could be a graphic designer, or it could be a radio host, or it could be a ballet choreographer. Okay. So it could just be anyone who is working in a creative field.
And what creative field are you working in?
So I, this is a not simple answer that I'm going to give you, but I'll try to keep it brief. So for money, I work with nonprofits. I'm a consultant. And the work that I do with nonprofits is in the creative realm. I tell stories to inspire nonprofits' constituents to take action, and oftentimes that's making a gift to a nonprofit. And I also write people's websites or edit grant applications. I basically hone stories for my clients. And then I also have an artistic practice that is not usually related to money. So I think of the work that I do in sort of three categories. And one is work that I do for money. And it's also just that's also the work that I do to sort of help make the world a better place. I work for nonprofits that are doing incredible work, and all of their missions are very worthy. And then I do volunteer work, and that volunteer work is also for nonprofits. And then I have an art practice. And so my art practice, right now I'm making a podcast. And so I'm taking my skills as a storyteller and making a storytelling podcast about the Upper Peninsula. And then I also make ceramics. And I do a lot of organizing, sort of social practice art in Portland, Oregon.
Okay. And now you talked about doing the podcasts about the Upper Peninsula. Podcasting, I understand, is new to you.
It is. So I had a revelation. I had a series of revelations last year. Last May and June, I was in Marquette for about 3 weeks with my boyfriend, Jason Powers, and we were cleaning out his deceased mother's house. And that is a laborious and emotional job. And I was here for about a month, and I think he was here for 6 weeks. And about halfway through, we decided to take a break from, you know, making runs to St. Vinny's and trying to give away her things or find, you know, rehome her things you know, make minor repairs to the house. It's just like this endless list of things to do when someone dies and you have to, like, take care of the contents of their home. And so we decided to take a break, and Jason suggested that we do a quick trip up the Keweenaw. So we went on this road trip, and it was just like 36 hours in the Keweenaw. And about halfway through, I was like, I'd like to move here, please. Because I had already been so seduced by Marquette, and we had already started talking when we were back in Portland about our secret second life in Marquette. But this trip up the Keweenaw just blew my mind. And it's hard to sort of explain why. It sort of felt like a spiritual awakening or something. And I'm being tongue-in-cheek, like it wasn't really a spiritual awakening, but I felt just completely seduced by the Copper Country. And while we were on this trip in the Keweenaw, all these strange things happened, we saw all these strange things. Okay. Not creepy, but just sort of notably weird. It felt very Twin Peaksy to me being up in the Keweenaw. You know, we saw a red fox crossing the road. We heard an incredible radio show that was like, that came out of nowhere, and was so good. And we were picking it up like on this ridge that we were driving on, and like there are no radio stations around. We don't know where it was beaming in from. Yeah. And we went to the jam pot, you know, and bought dandelion jelly from Monk's. Yeah. And we saw a sign that was hand drawn that just said deer skull boiling. And we stayed in the Lorium Manor, and there were mouse traps behind the radiator. You know, it was just sort of like, none of those things in and of itself is like so, I don't know, notable, but all of these things together painted such like this delightfully strange picture of the Upper Peninsula. And that's tip of the iceberg. I'm leaving out a lot. So then I went home to Portland. And I'm just living my life. And we live on an extinct volcano in Portland called Mount Tabor. And we live at the base of it. And I often walk over the volcano to go to the ceramic studio, or I'll walk up the volcano just for exercise. And I listen to podcasts. I love podcasts. Mm-hmm. And one day I was walking back. I have such a perfect mental picture of this because it was a eureka moment, and it will sound so obvious to you, but to me it was like huge. I'm walking down the volcano and I'm about a block away from our house, and I was like, man, I love this show. And I don't remember what show I was listening to. It was probably This American Life or a Criminal. And I was like, man, someone should do a podcast about the Upper Peninsula. And then I took like four more steps and I was like, wait, Jason is an audio engineer and I am a storyteller. And it had never occurred to me before. And the fact that my boyfriend is an audio engineer really gave me the confidence to say like, oh, we can do this. And so I think that he was gone. Like he was on tour or something with... he wasn't around, and I remember calling him immediately and saying, like, Jason, will you do this thing with me? Will you be my audio engineer if I make a podcast? And he said, yes, I will teach you how to use Pro Tools, and I will help you with this. But that's a great idea. And he didn't even think about it. He just said, yeah, someone should do a podcast about the Upper Peninsula.
And then how quickly did you learn about this residency and were able to apply?
So I think that eureka moment happened maybe in August, I'm guessing. I remember it was summertime. And I just sort of thought about it and started making notes. And then I found out about the residency in January of this year.
Okay. So a quick turnaround.
Yes.
And so how's the project going? You've been here for almost the whole time, two plus months.
Yeah, I've been here
since. What are some of the things you found?
Yeah, well, I've been here since March 19th, and I think I've recorded 13 people. My goal was to leave here with enough tape for 8 episodes, and every episode is just one person's story, and then some context for the story. I have more than I need. And I probably have maybe another 5 interviews lined up before I leave on June 1st. I am meeting the most incredible people, and it's almost entirely word of mouth. I've put flyers up all over the Upper Peninsula, with my personal cell phone number on it and an email saying, you know, I want to hear your stories.
Yeah.
But I will say that most of the best storytellers that I've spoken to have come to me through complete serendipity. I went out to Conover, Wisconsin to visit some friends, and they said, oh, you should call so-and-so, a friend of ours who's a bait trapper who lives in Mass City. And so, like, they made an introduction, and, you know, a few weeks later, we went out to Mass City, and we recorded this incredible storyteller in his garage workshop with, like, a leech tank gurgling behind us and the garage door wide open and the sun streaming in. And then later that day, we were on our way back to Marquette, and we saw a road sign that said Ontonagon 14 miles. And we were like, oh, it's only 14 miles. Let's just go to Ontonagon.
Yeah.
So we went into Ontonagon, and we only walked into one shop. And we wound up talking to this woman who's the shopkeeper, and Jason ended up sort of striking up a conversation with her, and she ended up having these incredible stories and was such a generous storyteller. And so we said, I said, wait, don't stop talking. Can I go get my recording equipment, and will you be on my podcast?
Mm-hmm.
And she said, Oh, okay. And I went out and got my recording equipment. We brought it inside. We recorded her in her shop. She just put the clothes sign up and turned off the ceiling fans, and we made a studio in her shop.
Oh, that's great.
So those are just like, so it's either like complete serendipity, like being in the right place at the right time, or sort of having people be like, oh, you should talk to so-and-so.
Mm-hmm.
They're a good storyteller.
Yeah.
And so far we've recorded in Ontonagon, Mass City, Iron River, a bunch in Marquette, and we also just have stories from all over. One of my favorite stories takes place in Munising in the 1960s.
Can you tell us more, or do you want to save it for the podcast?
Well, I'll tell you this. It involves teenage boy luck, a half-wrecked car, and a softball falling out of the clear blue sky.
Okay. You said you were just shooting to do 8 podcasts, but you've already got 13 people signed up. Is the series going to be longer? Maybe 2 parts? 8 and 8? Are you looking for more folks? Tell us.
I think that this is my current thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm laughing because my current thinking has been shifting with my enthusiasms. But my current thinking is to stick with the plan to only release 8 episodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think that trying to do more would be biting off more than I can chew, considering I'm going to be learning how to use Pro Tools.
Right.
As I'm editing the first season. And learning the basics of distributing, you know, podcast distribution. So my plan is to get the first 8 episodes edited and out into the world by next winter, or this coming winter. And then if there's extras, they might be in a second season. I am still looking for stories. I think that the work that I'm doing right now is the foundational work. And so if the podcast is successful, and I don't mean that in a monetary way, I think that, like, I mean that if it finds an audience, if people like it,
mm-hmm.
and if I have fun doing it, then recording another round of interviews for the second season will happen quickly. I won't need 3 months. I'll need to just sort of touch down in Marquette for a few weeks potentially,
right.
to record enough. And I think that I'll have some orphan episodes that don't get put into the first season, because I think that I'll probably leave here with 20 interviews recorded.
Really? Wow. So much has happened, so many great things that you've discovered. How has this experience changed you?
That's a great question. That's such an NPR question. Like, that's in a book I read about interviewing. I think that I just have, like, this renewed and deep appreciation for the generosity of people who live in the Upper Peninsula. I have been ostensibly cold calling or warm calling potential storytellers. Mm-hmm. And I'll call and I'll say, like, hey, Bob, you know, so-and-so gave me your phone number and said that, you know, I'm working on a podcast, and then I'll explain what a podcast is. You know, it's radio storytelling. And anyway, I'm working on this project. I'm looking for stories. And, you know, I'm wondering, would you be willing to meet me and sort of, you know, tell me a story or two? You know, here's the parameters. And my parameters are hard to explain, and so that takes a while, where I'll say, like, you know, I'm looking for a first-person account of something that could only happen in the Upper Peninsula, a story that you tell, like, while you're ice fishing, or a story that you tell at camp, something that makes your audience's eyebrows raise or their jaws drop. And so by the time I get done with my spiel, it's a few minutes, and I can't even tell you the number. Like, almost no one has said no. Or if they say no, it's because they're like, oh, I don't have what you need, but you should call my Aunt Shirley.
Okay. Yeah.
So people are just deeply generous. Or, like, I'll show up to interview someone. This just happened 2 days ago, and it is not the first time this has happened. I set up an interview with someone who I met at Easter supper, this really nice man, and he agreed to tell me his stories. He's a great storyteller. And so he's doing me this huge favor, and I'm going to his house to record in his house, and I show up, and I'm so grateful. I'm just like, John, thank you so much for having me. And he's like, are you hungry? We made a snack tray. And I'm like, that is just like a typical Uber experience for me here, where someone is doing, you know, I feel that someone is doing me this gigantic favor, and then, like, they're like, can I feed you too? So I think that it's inspiring me to just sort of, I'm the kind of person who says yes a lot, but I am feeling inspired to say yes even more.
Okay. That's great. It almost sounds from the way you're talking that this is not just you exploring doing storytelling via podcasts, but the Upper Peninsula is integral to this project. I have the feeling that if I asked you, could you see yourself going somewhere else and doing this, the energy might be a notch or two lower, that the UP really is integral.
Yes. This project specifically is really about the Upper Peninsula. Yeah. And I think that arguably, I don't have a lot of experience in sort of the Northwoods region. Mm-hmm. I think that arguably this project could be expanded to Wisconsin and Minnesota, the sort of this cultural region. Mm-hmm. But for me, this project, all successful art projects need some constraints. And so the constraints for this podcast are, it has to happen in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and it has to be a first-person account. And then, and that's it. I mean, there's only two. I mean, and the other thing is that it has to be a great story. And yeah. It can't, like, it has to be a story that could only happen here.
Yeah. Brisa Culver, thank you so much for joining us today. This has been a wonderful story.
Thanks.